Welcome to Pap Talk, a podcast from Contemporary OBGYN, where we deliver expert insight, commentary, and more on emerging topics and trends for doctors in women's health.
Hello, I'm Angie DeRosa, Senior Editor of Contemporary OBGYN. In our next interview, we speak with Dr. Washington Hill, a maternal fetal medicine specialist at Sarasota Memorial Hospital in Florida. Dr. Hill has been a practicing OBGYN for 55 years, and at one point in his career, he had been told by a white man that he did not want Dr. Hill, a black man, delivering his baby. The voice of reason in that situation prevailed, and a higher authority said that Dr. Hill would indeed deliver the baby. He would go on to deliver so many more during his very illustrious career. You will see a provocative commentary from him in the August issue of Contemporary OBGYN, where he discusses how OBGYNs currently, today, can use their platform to address racial injustices and the issue of health equity, which, by the way, is not the same as health equality. And you will hear Dr. Hill address that in this video interview. In the aftermath of George Floyd's death, society seems to have awakened even more to the pervasive issue of systemic racism. And during the pandemic, what also has become apparent is the discrepancies in how it's affecting the African-American community and other minorities. In this corner of health, for obstetricians and gynecologists, indeed, a lot of progress has been made. There is no question. It has come a long way from where gynecology had its roots in slavery. We must acknowledge, however, the racial disparities in the practice and discuss implicit bias and other systemic issues. Thank you so much for doing this interview with us. We are
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's needed.
Yes.
Clearly is needed. I have an interview, a meeting with my CEO and the chief legal officer on Monday.
Okay.
And I'm talking to them about diversity and inclusion and issues for years. And it's still an issue. The hospital put out a community update. I just got it yesterday, you know, it was emailed, and nowhere in the update, and it said it's a community update, and they do it every year. Nowhere was there acknowledgement of anything about diversity, nothing. The word wasn't mentioned. And when I see him on Monday, and the legal officer said, you all missed, not only should it be there, because there's so much going on, you should have had something in it, and I'm sure I'll hear, well, you know, it was an abbreviated one because of COVID. Well, you put everything in there about the new building that you're building and the other building and the awards. There was not even a word. And that's the mindset. Our meeting is because I sent him a letter about that the hospital needs a chief diversity officer. At the minimum, they need more awareness on culture competency. But the best would be a chief diversity officer. You would never have a hospital without a chief financial officer or a chief information officer or a chief nursing officer or a chief medical officer, right?
Yes.
And you would not have and just say, well, we can handle chief information. We don't need a person to do it. And the same thing is true here. You need someone who has the mindset of, are we doing what we need to be doing in everything in terms of diversity and inclusion? And if there had been one, that person would have looked at this and said, gee, there's nothing in here about diversity.
Right.
Even the word. And that's what this was all about.
And, you know, it's very interesting to me, first of all.
Right.
You have seen the spectrum. And what's right. So interesting to me was your points in your commentary about how we still have a ways to go. And what you're telling me right now.
And this is a county hospital.
Okay.
So they have an obligation to, it's not HCA, it's nothing like that. It's a county system. They get money from the citizens of the city.
Yes.
And I just think that they don't have a focus. Now, he did say there are some initiatives that they're going to have, and that's why he wanted to bring in the chief legal officer, mm-hmm. who I know very well.
Okay.
And her cultural competency, I'm sure, is much more than the CEO. When Obama was here, first campaign, he was at one of the colleagues' houses.
Okay.
And he was there with her son. So I know that her cultural awareness is more than the CEO's. But we are just missing the boat, and that's so it's a whole system.
Yes.
You know, yes, we've made changes. I can remember when I was in the military, which would have been 70 or so, a sergeant said that he did not want me to examine his wife. And I don't know where I was, probably El Paso or Germany. And the CEO at that time said, well, then I guess your wife's not going to be seen, which is the exact thing that he should have said. So we've come a long way since then. And yes, we've done a few little things that, like at our hospital, we have a diversity council.
Okay.
That took forever to get going. But it has a very limited role. For example, the diversity council really is to put on diverse events. It's kind of started out of February being Black History Month.
Okay.
And then there was an event for Latinos, Cinco de Mayo. It was a Cinco de Mayo event. And then there was something on disability. But that's only half of the pie. And there's so much more that we should do. The other thing is, I think that OBGYNs have a platform where they can use that platform, whether you're a medical student or whether you're me or, you know, somewhere in between. And we, more and more of us, both Black and white and polka dot, are realizing that we need to do that.
So right now at this stage, I want to know from your perspective, from your very profound perspective, by the way, and thank you for everything that you've done, and the not only being in the military, but being a foot soldier.
Thank you very much.
For women's health, for minorities, and for addressing these social issues at the granular level.
Thank you very much. You know, I sincerely appreciate it. I think that you have an obligation. I'll give you an example. A friend called, and I think this will answer your question.
Okay.
She was at the University of Maryland. She's a general OBGYN. I met her first in Rwanda, where we went, where we were there to educate medical students, faculty, and anyone who was still long enough. During the Clinton administration, there was a Clinton Foundation, and through Duke and her through Maryland, we ended up in Kigali in a small room, a third of the size of my living room, trying to educate people. And she called me and said, you know, I'm thinking about leaving the University of Maryland. We have, and she's from Ethiopia, and it's in Baltimore. 75% of their patients are African American. They have no African American faculty, and they have no African American residents. The dean of the medical school is a very good friend of mine, okay. And he's from Jamaica. And she said, they just don't get it. And I said, you're right. And your job is to help them get it. I said to her, what are they going to do to you? They can't fire you. They're going to feel uncomfortable. And she says, yeah, The conversations are going to be uncomfortable, but you should use every opportunity you have to speak up and say, you know, we have 75% of our patients are African-American and we don't have an African-American resident. You mean to tell me we can't find one African-American resident to accept in the program? That's like saying all of them are male and we can't find a female. That used to be the case.
Sure.
And now it's just the opposite. Just the opposite. So OBGYNs need to look at every opportunity they have to make sure that diversity and inclusion is a part of what they're doing, whether it's care, whether it's studies,
yes,
whether it's residency, whether it's medical education, whatever. Because if they don't do it, if the African Americans and those whites who are sensitive to the issue don't do it, it's not going to be done.
And it's like you said, it's going to require, and it does require, having uncomfortable conversations.
I am sure the conversation I have on Monday is going to be uncomfortable. And I will tell, I know both these folks. I say, thanks. You know, this conversation is not going to be comfortable.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you how I feel and how the community feels and how I think we are missing the boat.
So for your system in Florida, obviously now too, with COVID cases increasing and that's highlighting the discrepancies in healthcare too.
Right.
Do you think that that's helping this case at all?
I think what Tony Fauci was asked at a press conference way back when, and they were talking about data, and someone just in passing had said that this was hitting Black and brown communities more. And then a reporter asked him why. And his answer was so important. And he said, what COVID did was to put a spotlight on the social determinants of health and the differences in healthcare that Black and Browns were getting and the racism that had existed in healthcare. He didn't have to say that. And he went on about rights and the freedom of speech and Second Amendment, this, that, and the other. And we could say, this is not rocket science here. We could save lives by having people wear a mask. You can, if I was COVID positive, you cannot get it from me. You cannot get it from me. I have a twin brother. He started in a study of bacteriology, parasitology, and that's how he got his fame. And he's a member of the Institute of Medicine. And then he became involved at Vanderbilt in diversity and inclusion.
Both of you were honored with Lifetime Achievement Awards.
How'd you know that?
For civic engagement.
Yeah. In fact, the next call is to Rutgers. Yes, we were.
So congratulations. Thank you.
And what we just felt it was important to give back to Rutgers, et cetera, et cetera. So.
And so with both of you seeing what's happening at the national level with COVID and the misinformation, basically, that the American public is being given, to your point about addressing the systemic and racial injustices.
You have to see, you get it. The first people have to understand and accept that there's something called racism. Now, some people do not get that. No question. I wrote something for the newspaper, and he said that there weren't different levels of care in Sarasota, and that I was wrong. He was a very wealthy plastic surgeon who's now retired. He didn't get it. people have to, first of all, understand that there is such a thing as racism. Now, if they, once they get that, then they'll understand that when a minority person is born into this society, from the day they're born, they have to deal with racism. This, as you know, this country was started through racism. Somebody came and did it to the Indians, right? And that started the whole process.
Yes.
And we have to accept that and own it. Once we own it, then we can do something about it. And I think that is what's happening. We then can say, okay, yes, there's structural racism. Yes, there are parts of town where blacks were put and the other part where whites were put.
Yes.
We all know that. I grew up that way. Baltimore, Camden,
yes.
Sarasota. Okay, that's North Sarasota. Publix is not in North Sarasota. Walmart was going to be there, but they didn't accept some things that were asked. The mall is not in North Sarasota. What's in North Sarasota is Popeyes. And then you say, well, why are they so fat? Because they don't have any fruits and vegetables, fresh fruits and vegetables, but what they have are Popeyes and Kentucky Fried Chicken. And then you say, well, why do they have more high blood pressure or asthma, as the article said? Because where they're living in North Sarasota, there's factories. There's an old dump. It's fenced off, but it's an old dump full of pollutants. And across the street is housing. Give me a break. Someone said, it was on 60 Minutes, do you think that if the Flint water crisis had happened in white neighborhoods, well, first of all, could it have? Yes, it could have. Do you think it would have lasted so long? And the woman said, well, it could have happened. No question, it could have happened.
Yeah.
But it would never have lasted so long.
And those are the built-in systemic issues that I call foot soldiers have to begin addressing to carry us through to the next, what I see as the next evolution of society. Now I look at, and as you do.
First of all, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's the implicit bias that exists that causes that to happen. You're right. And unless we can recognize that implicit bias and talk about it and then say, okay, what can we do about it? It won't change. And it can't take another 55 years. I will tell you, you're younger than I. It will not take 55 years because the young people, you know what young people want.
I do.
You know that. You mentioned your family. They're not going to put up with it.
No.
They are not going to put up with it. They're going to say, this is not right. Who I marry, who I love is none of your damn business. Right?
Yes.
And this has to change.
Yes. But I also want to get your take, too, on the bigger factors like, you know, maternal mortality.
Right.
Dr. Hill, and how we begin addressing these really big issues for the African-American community as OBGYNs.
Okay. The National Medical Association met a year ago, actually it's less than a year ago, in August, and had a maternal mortality summit. I organized it along with several other people, and the article came out a month ago. And what the article shows is what we need to do in regards to maternal mortality. And a way to think of it is, and we've said it for years, clearly Black mothers die 3 to 4 times more than white mothers in childbirth. That is a fact, that is the data. I have colleagues, a very bright woman like you, who works with CDC and Julie says, that's a fact.
Yeah.
Now the answer is, what do we do to one, uncover why that is and to prevent it? And that's your question. And the answer is, it's multifaceted.
Yes.
It's multifaceted. It has to do with, and you'll see it in the article, has to do, the number one thing was racial equity. It has to do with equity. And what I mean by that is, think that we have services that everyone needs. We'll just pick out an ultrasound. Have you ever been pregnant? Yes?
Yes.
Okay, so you had an ultrasound.
Oh yeah.
Okay. All right, let's say that an ultrasound is something that a pregnant woman needs to help her during the pregnancy. Now, if there was a group of people who we said, you can't get an ultrasound, that would be unjust and it would not be equal service.
Right.
And everybody would be up in arms and say, what do you mean she can't have an ultrasound? Well, she can't have an ultrasound. You know, she's a Black woman, she can't have an ultrasound. They don't need it. Okay. But it has to do with equity. The service is there. Yes. She needs the service. Yes. We need to make sure the baby's normal. Yes. She has her insurance. Yes, she was given an insurance by the state, and it's called Plan A. It's actually called something else. It's called Plan A. However, Plan A does not work in Sarasota. Well, why was she given it?
Right.
Because the government said, you need government-assisted insurance, and this is your plan that we have for you. They were up, and you're the one for it, and you can have it. Now, there is an option for her to opt out of that and to switch, but she didn't know anything about that. What she knows is that, hey, I got my Medicaid, and here it is, and it's Plan A, and I'm going. And she had to jump through hoops to get to that. And that's why she came in at 28 weeks pregnant.
Right.
You asked them in a non-judgmental manner, where you been? I always say, I start off, I'm not being critical of you. Right. I want to help you. I want to help the system. Where have you been? You're 26 weeks pregnant. Well, Dr. Hill, you know, I applied for Medicaid and then had to go down to the computer place. And one day I couldn't go. I had the kids. And then I called them and this and that. And then finally I got it. And she's 26 weeks pregnant. And now she's got Plan A, which doesn't. So now she needs this ultrasound. She cannot find someone to get the ultrasound in Sarasota. She has to go across the bridge to St. Petersburg. She's got 3 kids, and yep. Sometimes the car doesn't work, and her partner's got to work. You can't take off at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and go in for an ultrasound. Got a job. So, yes, there's equality, but no, there's not equity. And that is the difference. And then she comes in.
Yeah.
And she has a placenta previa.
Yes.
And she bleeds to death, and she dies. Or she has, she's obese, and she has a high blood pressure, and she strokes out, and she dies. That's the difference between equality and equity. Or she goes into the emergency room after she delivers.
Yes.
And the emergency room doctor says, well, he's used to seeing old people like me. And he said, well, blood pressure is 150 over 100. That's pretty good. Why don't you go home, call your doctor in the morning, and things will be cool. Well, she wakes up dead because 150 over 100 in a postpartum. Your blood pressure was 150 over 100, and your doctor called me. I say, no, you can't send her home. What, are you crazy? Right?
Yes.
So it's a multifaceted problem, education of providers, reaching the women. They have to realize what to expect, what they should be eating.
Yes.
Reaching the system. And you may say, well, what does racism have to do with this? Well, somebody gave her that insurance in the first place.
That's right.
They didn't take the time to figure out whether Plan A was working in Sarasota. What they said was, it's supposed to be working in Sarasota, and yes, we have providers in the Sarasota area. Well, Plan A does not have anybody in Sarasota, sir, who takes the plan. And therefore, yes, you're right. There are providers in the area who take care of ultrasound for this patient. However, they're not in Sarasota. They're across the bridge in St. Petersburg or down 15, 20 miles in Northport. You see what I'm saying?
All these variables. That's what I...
All those variables.
I get so passionate about and really like to discuss and think about are all those factors that access to transportation, access to, as you said before, the right types of foods, right? You said North Sarasota didn't have a Publix.
Right.
As an example. So those social determinants. We go back to those social determinants also.
Right.
That for worse, for African Americans in those pockets.
Right.
And then it can, like you said, you have somebody who comes into your practice and you say, well, you're 26 weeks pregnant. Where have you been?
Right.
And she has had all these obstacles.
She's had those obstacles to get there. Thank goodness she got there. Because sometimes we see them in the OB emergency room and they've had no prenatal care for whatever reason.
And so they're probably not getting the education on prenatal vitamins?
Right. Or the other things that are necessary, counting fetal movement, preterm labor, all the other things that they need, they're not getting. Now, there are groups, Healthy Start, and other groups that help provide that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you say that Black Lives Matter, all they're saying is that the racism that we've had has not emphasized that. And if you just take a small piece of it, pregnant moms, it's very easy to understand. Put aside men in jail, okay? Put aside other issues, but just to think of mothers who die, you can say, you're right. The system has not helped that. In fact, there are ways in which it has hurt it.
And so, to what you're going to do on Monday, you have your meeting, right? So,
right.
Will you be advocating for a chief diversity?
Yeah. Sure. I'll send you something. I sent the CEO a letter. And again, I know this guy. Steve, see him every day. When I'm not there every day now because of the COVID.
Okay.
But and in the letter, I said we need a chief diversity officer, and I spelled it out very clearly. I actually had run the letter by about 6 different people, okay. And they said, you've been very clear here, and you're right. And I'm sure you do that from time to time. Let me have somebody else look at this for me. And I did. And everyone said, sounds good to me. Well, first thing that happened was I didn't hear anything for 10 days. And that's a problem. And I told him in the follow-up, I know COVID's here. I'm on my way to the clinic. I know it. And I said, a friend of mine, he's a dean, he said, just ask him, did this get lost in cyberspace? And with that note, that day, we set up the appointment. And we'll be advocating for a chief diversity officer, which the answer is probably going to be no, but there are a number of them around in various systems. I know a lot of people, and the Florida Hospital Association executive director is sending me the list of those where they exist. So, and if we don't have a person with that name,
yes,
we need to have someone who does it. And at the present time, we don't have that. Example, your community report didn't even mention the word diversity, nor did it show what you are doing. And the other thing I've criticized them before is you all need to spend time on saying what you have done, because the community needs to hear that. They wouldn't be so upset with you if it's like your partner. Hey, honey, you never tell me that I look good, right? Right? You only tell me that dinner wasn't good or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And that this hospital needs to say, these are the things that we've done, and these are the things that we're thinking of doing. They mentioned the new building, the new cancer center. Well, what about, and in that cancer center, we're going to have an emphasis on really reducing breast cancer in African Americans, and we need your help. Give me a break. That would have been so helpful. And the sororities and the rich folks, a lot of rich Black folks in this community would have said, hey, we're ready to help you. And a judge here, he's been here much longer than I sent him the community update and said, what's missing here? He said, there's nothing in it about diversity or what the community, what the minority community really wants to hear. And he said, the question is it inadvertent or is it intentional? And I said, well, I'd like to think it was inadvertent, that they just didn't inadvertent, whatever that means. And he said, I don't think it was inadvertent. That is very sad.
It takes people who will draw it out, like you are, saying, this is what we have to consider. This is what we have to do. The wording.
I know there's going to be a labor and delivery in Spokane, Washington, where someone's going to see this and say, yeah, I wonder, he's right. He's right.
Is that this is so important of a topic, it cannot be swept under the rug.
Sure.
It has to be brought to light.
And this will help. This will definitely help.
And people need to be thinking about it on a conscious level. Overall, but you know, in the OBGYN practice too, to think about, how are we doing things in our practice? What can we be doing better?
Right.
Having, if you know, a hospital system can have a chief diversity officer, but on, you know, on the level that it can be done for these other practices, to your point, you know, Washington State, there's an L&D. Okay, how can we be doing better?
Right. Right.
How can we be educating people? How can we, what literature?
Right.
Imagery,
right.
Positive imagery, positive associations, because it is a psychological interplay.
Well, I'm glad that you all have accepted it so well and agree with what we're trying to do. And Kathy, I've known Kathy forever when she was at the NIH and before.
Yeah, we are working with our board. We are diversifying our board. That is a conscious push.
I saw that.
You know, it's not overnight, right? You well know. These changes are not going to happen overnight, but if we're doing everything that we can and consciously working toward those changes, we're moving in a better direction.
That's all we can ask.
And that's what we need to do. That's the responsibility and the moral obligation.
It's using your moral compass.
So, how are things with COVID where you are? Bad. Florida's getting...
what you've heard on the news is where it is. We opened up too soon. No question. The bars were open. And there's a cure for this, or certainly a delay in the transmission, and that is wearing a mask. We fought for and did get a city ordinance. The mayor is very progressive. I know her very well. The county is just the opposite. The county is like the governor, and they give you the whole spiel. The governor feels that what he is doing is right. The government is just following what our White House is saying. The numbers today, I have them, I think they were 12,000. Now this, of course, reflects when the tests were done, which is roughly a week or so ago. My friend just had one done, and she was told 4 to 5 days. Before we got on this call, she didn't text me and tell me she got it, the results. So it's taken about 5 days or so. We get, there's way too many mixed messages. The church that I go to, which is a Presbyterian church, and I'm not Presbyterian, but people, I say, well, why you go? It's 5 minutes from my house. And they had a 9:30 modern service. I certainly don't agree with a lot of the theology, but they then decided they would have, during the service, you could either wear the mask or not wear it. People who wore the mask sat on one side, and people who didn't wear it sat on the other side. They would try to practice social distancing. They would have a hand sanitizer. And I actually sent a note to the pastor, and I told him I thought this was craziness. Because if you say that, then they'll go to Publix without their mask. I went to church, and I didn't need a mask. I went to war. Why can't I go to Costco without my mask? I'm just going to stay away from people. So that's what we're fighting. Hopefully the numbers here will decrease. But as of today, they have not done that.
Stay safe.
Thank you very much. I thank you for your understanding. You know, we need colleagues like you and Julie at CDC and Jennifer with AMAG and young, bright women like you all who understand and are willing to be great supporters. What can I say? Thank you for being receptive to my thoughts and to the editorial.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Pap Talk. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.